Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'd like to greet you in Jesus' name. And I'd like to start off by saying this, that yesterday I got a call requesting that I come here and get my picture taken with the teachers. And as we were standing there in the back and being photographed, this thought occurred to me. Here I am standing beside men that are, for the most part, twice as old as I am and one going on three times as old as I am. And yet it was me that they requested that I share on perhaps the most controversial subject that you will hear this week. Also coupled with the fact that exactly 1 year ago, I was sitting right there where you are sitting. So all that makes me just a little bit intimidated on speaking on this subject. So if you bear with me, if I stutter around a little bit or just lose my spot, I would appreciate grace. Music. What goes through your mind when you think of that subject, of that, of just the creating of music or singing or listening? What goes on through your mind? Well, a lot goes on through my mind, let me tell you. And I would just want to start off by saying this, that I am not standing here as one that claims to know everything. I have many things that I have yet to learn. To learn everything there is to know about music, it would take a very long time. Some people estimate 200 years. And I don't have that kind of time, and neither do we. So we have to do with what we have. It is not easy to speak on the subject. There are many what ifs and what abouts, and I'm still learning and often challenged. One of the things that makes it hard is because music communicates many things on a subconscious level. It is like wind. You can hear it, you can see its results, but you cannot see the wind itself. And because it is, there's quite a bit of things that are intangible about the whole subject of music, it's hard to make things black and white at times. So people said to me this week, oh, you're teaching on music. The way I'd like to say it is, I would like to share with you a little bit different than teaching. I would like to share with you what I've learned. And I'm not saying that I have everything down pat. I'm not saying that I know everything. I want to be very clear on that. And if you hear something that I say that you don't necessarily agree with it, I would really appreciate hearing about it. I'm ever learning, and I have many things that I still have yet to learn on this subject. So I would like to give you my conclusion first. The conclusion to this whole message and questions that I will do my best to leave room for at the end. I have about 15 slips of papers that I would like to read off and just as briefly as I can answer those questions. The conclusion is this to everything, is that a tree is known by its fruit. A tree is known by its fruit. And there's no real way around that. I have yet to see someone make wrong musical choices and progress spiritually. I have yet to see it. And again, I want to make a major point of this. I don't know fully why that happens, but that's the way it works. And most of my observations are based on the fruit that I see produced. It's like that passage in the Bible that says, we can only but speak what we have seen and heard. So that's what I would like to do today. So I'd like to start out by asking a few questions. And for the sake of time, I'm not necessarily going to be awaiting a response from you, just, you know, to have somebody raise their hand. It's just something to think about. And the most obvious question is, what is music? What is music? Have you ever thought about that? If you were trying to define music in your mind, what would it be? You know, it's not as easy as when you think about it as it sounds like. You know, something that is so familiar to us. But try to define it. I've found through my studies in the past year or so that your perception of something, of an idea, or a word, or some biblical concept, changes when you actually look at what the definition is. And, you know, I just remember coming across these discoveries and just thinking, oh, so that's what it means. Wow, that is a high standard on this subject or that subject. So, several definitions of music. First of all, where the word comes from. It comes from the Greek word which means to muse or to think. And that is opposite of amuse. Okay, let's keep that in mind. Two more definitions here of music. An art of sound in time that expresses ideas and emotions in significant forms through the elements of rhythm, melody, harmony, and color. Another definition would be the science or art of ordering tones or sounds in succession, in combination, and in temporal relationships to produce a composition having unity and continuity. Now, that is a mouthful, right? It is a mouthful. But I just wanted to read those so that we have some kind of base that we can work from. So, questions that concern Christians have been raising for years on the subject. Do we consider music as having its own morality? If yes, what standard or principles do we measure it by? What is immoral music? How do you discern the moral music from the immoral? Those are all very legitimate questions. Music is mentioned everywhere in the Bible. By some estimates, depending on how you take the different verse apart, or how you just, you know, how many times you actually count it, maybe in the same verse or a different verse, or if it's on one thought there. By some estimates, it's around 500 times that music is mentioned in the Bible. 500 times. It is used to praise, to warn, to summon, to prophesy. We read about at the time of creation, Job chapter 38, verses 4 through 7. Where was thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? Or who hath stretched the line upon it? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof, when the morning stars sang together? And all the sons of God shouted for joy. This is at the time of creation. In heaven we read about a lamb as it had been slain. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and the 24 elders fell down before the lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of odors, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain, and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. It's been talked about man-made things in heaven. Have you ever heard that people ask, you know, is there anything man-made in heaven? All right, I have before, and you know, you're thinking there, what's man-made in heaven? You know, the thought just I don't know how to say it. It's just not something you think about, because heaven is where God dwells, and you know, everything that's on earth is all, you know, just so low and sinful, you can say, how would anything unregenerate that was made on earth end up in heaven? So, and people say, oh, well, the nail scars on Jesus' hands, right? Have you ever heard that one? So I've heard that one. But when I actually researched the subject, I didn't exactly find a place in the Bible that talks about that Jesus still has his nail scars in his hands, or the wound in his side. So I never found a place. I'm not sure, but Revelation 15, verse 3. This is what we read. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, Great and marvelous are thy works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are thy ways, thou King of saints. And they sing the song of Moses. So I say all that just for you to get a glimpse of the gravity of the situation, of what this topic is about, what it means to God. Some ministries will not be needed in heaven. Preaching, visiting the sick, helping the poor, that will not be needed in heaven. But we have an eternity of music to look forward to. Not everything in the Bible where music is mentioned is all positive. We read of the misuse of music in Exodus chapter 32, a great chapter to study sometime just to go through it all. I will not do that right now for the sake of time, but I will just remind us of the scene. The scene is this, that Moses is in the mount and Joshua is close by. Meanwhile, Aaron makes himself a golden calf or for the people there. And the people, it says that they eat and drink, and then they rose up to play. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said unto Moses, "There is a noise of war in the camp." And he said, "It is not the voice of them that shout for mastery, neither is it the voice of them that cry for being overcome, but the noise of them that sing do I hear." So we remember that they were worshiping this golden calf and bowing down to it and just committing all sorts of wickedness. But music played a large part of their so-called worship, which was heard before it was seen. Joshua couldn't see what was going on there, but he could hear it. And do we remember what was the sight? If we read, it says, black and white, it says that the people were naked. And that thought makes me think, so what kind of music is present while people are in that state? You know, are you hearing things like holy, 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 or eternal Father? Is that what you're hearing? You know, I don't think so. I don't think so. Let's talk a little bit about music and morality. How can we draw lines between what is acceptable to God and what is not? You know, is that even a question? You know, does God care about music? Does God care about the music I listen to, the music you listen to, the music we sing, the music we play? Does God care about that? And I would say that He does. He cares about what we do and the spirit in which we do it. Again, remember, referring to the definition of music, that it expresses ideas and emotions. Ideas and emotions are a serious subject with God. They are. So, there is no verse in the Bible that says, thou shalt not listen to this or that. There's no verse in the Bible that says that. I personally wish there was, but there's not. It would make things a lot easier and make it irrelevant for me to stand here. But there's not. So, we must measure music or any art for that matter, by principles that are clearly laid out in Scripture. And I will read from James chapter 3, verses 13 through 17. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And that's James 3, 13 through 17. Here we read about two kinds of wisdoms. And depending on the kind of wisdom used in a piece of music, depending on the kind of wisdom used to either produce it or to perform it, we can determine the morality of the music using those principles. So the wisdom is displayed in the lyrics, in the manner, in the style, in the visual aspects of the music making process. It is the complete package. We can apply those principles when we see or hear a musical performance. We can apply those principles to determine the morality of the music. So I want to look at a key term here. The key term I'd like to look at is sensual. It's essential. And since I will be presenting quite a few definitions during this message, I want to define sensual. It is from the Greek word, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but the best I can do is psuchikos. And the definition is this: the sensuous nature with its subjection to appetite and passion. When I will be using the term sensual, that is the definition that I will be referring to. Now, I want to make a clarification here. There are things that are pleasing to the senses that are perfectly right and wholesome to enjoy. That is not what I'm talking about. For example, a good meal is enjoyable to our senses. A walk in the park, also. However, a good meal can be gluttony. And a walk in the park can be a waste of time. It can be not redeeming the time. So what makes the difference between the walk in the park where it's redeeming the time or whether it's wasting the time? And the key is this, that as a Christian, we take an objective approach to things like a good meal and things like a walk in the park. We take an objective approach to that. That means we control that. And it does not, whatever it is, does not subject us to its power. The Christian takes an objective approach to those things. Whereas we cannot take an objective approach to sin. Sin will always subject us to its power. Always. The other time the word sensual is used is in Jude 18 through 19. How that they told you there should be mockers in the last time who should walk after their own ungodly lusts. These be they who separate themselves sensual, having not the Spirit. This verse tells me that you cannot be sensual and have the Spirit of God at the same time. It is interesting to note that the only category of people that support the argument that music is amoral, which means it has no moral value to it, is the contemporary Christian music culture. And it is also interesting to note that there is something that conservative Christians and punk rockers have in common. And that is that they both believe that music has moral value. And I also want to make another little disclaimer here that the word contemporary is not bad in and of itself. All of us sitting here are contemporary. It just means in the now or at this time, to put it very basically. So it's not necessarily the word that makes something bad, okay, just because it's modern and we have to just be singing or performing music that only was written down 200 years ago because it's not contemporary. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I would like to define CCM or contemporary Christian music. Give a definition to it. This is straight from Wikipedia. You can go online and see for yourself. Contemporary Christian music or CCM is a genre of modern popular music which is lyrically focused on matters concerned with the Christian faith. Today, the term is typically used to refer to pop, rock, or praise and worship styles. So when I will be using the term CCM, I will be basing it off that definition. I'll read it again. Contemporary Christian music, or CCM, is a genre of modern popular music which is lyrically focused on matters concerned with the Christian faith. Today, the term is typically used to refer to pop, which stands for popular, rock, or praise and worship styles. The president of the Gospel Music Association once said, there really is no such thing as a Christian B-flat. Music in itself is an amoral vehicle. Okay, and the problem with that is that B-flat by itself is not music. It is only a building block of music. And a very practical example is that with the same alphabet, our alphabet that we use, I can create words, I can say words that will bless people. And with the same exact alphabet, I can say words or create words, write words that will curse people. The letters in themselves are not bad, but it's what we do with them. So, and I would like to give you two main problems that I see with CCM. And the very first one is the rock beat, the rock and roll beat that is used. Could I see a raise of hands? How many people know what rock and roll is slang for? Can I see a raise of hands? Okay, not many people here. So I will tell you what it is slang for. It is, to use a biblical term, it is slang for fornication. So when people say Christian rock and roll, to give a demonstration so you can make some applications, I would like to give you a very short intro to music. Okay, music is made up of three elements: melody, harmony, and rhythm. Each of these three elements affect a different part of you. Melody is the main part of a piece of music, and it's something that can stand alone. That's how we remember the tune of the song. It is like the main focus of the picture. You know, if we're going to be humming a melody or a song, we are going to be humming or alluding to the melody of the song. Harmony is when you play or sing two or more notes at one time and it carries the melody. It determines partially what kind of feel the music has to it. It is like the background to a picture. You can change a picture very much depending on the background you put to it. You can sing when the roll is called up yonder, and you can make it very nice and joyful. Switch around a few notes in the harmony, and you can make it a minor. And, you know, we'll be feeling all sad and everything when we sing that song. Rhythm is what your body responds to. And if you don't believe me, check out some very rhythmically focused cultures, and you'll see that they use their body a lot during their music. Which I won't get into that too much here, but rhythm is what your body responds to. One author stated, I thought this was very interesting, everything from the cycle of our brain waves to the pumping of our heart all work in rhythms. We're a mass of cycles piled one on top of another, so we're clearly organized both to generate and respond to rhythmic phenomena. I thought that was very interesting. Disclaimer here. Sometimes the rhythm affects the melody so much that the two are practically inseparable. Now, that is more of a modern style of writing music, a contemporary style of writing music, where that is possible. And again, with this introduction, there's no way that I can carry across everything that I would like to in one paragraph. So yes, there are many things that I'm leaving out. But again, for the sake of time, I'm just going to give, that was just a very basic introduction. Rhythm is what I want to look at specifically. If you remove the emphasis on rhythm from the modern music culture, Christian or secular, the whole thing will come crashing down. If you remove that emphasis, everything will come crashing down. Rhythm should be only a spice, or another way to put it, should be just a skeleton, okay, on which music is organized on. Okay, if you would take a look at your body, yes, we all have a skeleton, but I don't see any bones sticking out of anybody's side or back or anything. Okay, that would be a little bizarre. I would like to give a basic example of on-beat music and off-beat music. Just to show you, and this is a very mild example of what the rhythm, and depending on where you put the accents, how they can change, how manipulating the rhythm can change the perception the perception of a piece of music. So, Rescue the Perishing. Okay, we have each music has a tempo, it has a speed in which it is performed in, and here's the song that we're all familiar with, Rescue the Perishing. So, rescue the perishing, care for the dying. That's the way, even if we're not tapping or anything, that is the rhythm or just the tempo that, where the accents go. Now, let me show you something else. And listen carefully. I'm going to misplace the beat. From putting it on the strong beat, I'm going to make the upbeat strong now instead of the downbeat strong. And this will sound like this. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying. I'll do that again. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying. Now, I hope that most of us, or all of us, caught on what was happening. Did you feel how the song took on a completely different spirit, you could say, by giving it a dance-like quality? I did not change the lyrics. I did not change the melody. All I did was I misplaced the beat a little bit. That's all I did. And the change that happens is very substantial. Very substantial. So, good song, good words, but how you can manipulate what is presented by changing the beat. And again, that's a very mild example. In most wherever there's rhythm involved in the CCM culture, it is a lot more drastic. Okay, so that was a very basic example. The second problem that I have with CCM is their use of the pop voice. Or of the popular voice. And since I would not like to demonstrate it personally, I've asked the audio technician there at the sound booth to play a few clips, which we will listen to now, so you can hear for yourself what I'm talking about.
I knew you were the one. My heart was overcome. The day I looked into your eyes. Another Monday comes, and I just want to breathe. 'Cause it's a long, long week for someone wired to please.
Okay, thank you. Alright, so let's analyze the voices on those clips. If you were to describe them, how would you describe those voices? What kind of quality would you give them? And a question I'd like to ask is, do we talk that way? I hope not. If we don't talk that way, why not? Well, first of all, it's very inappropriate and scandalous. A scandalous way to talk to somebody. And, you know, if I just can imagine in my mind if, you know, some girl would come up and talk with me in that kind of voice, or two girls, some guy would come up and talk with that kind of voice, you would get a little bit uncomfortable. And your thoughts would start turning, oh, what's going on here? Am I being logical? Isn't that what would happen? So my question is, how in the world does it would make us feel so uncomfortable and sweat more than a little if it was done in a voice, but when it's sung, for the most part of Christianity, it becomes okay. Where's the misconnection here? So how would we describe those voices, those kind of voices? You know, crooning, sultry, intimate. It could also be described as intimate whispering. And that is the kind of voice that is predominantly used in CCM. So what can I say? If you're not going to be speaking in that kind of a way, then you shouldn't be singing in that kind of way. And here's the thing. How do people learn to sing in that kind of a voice? I've never heard of little children who grew up in a conservative environment sing that way. The thought just doesn't enter my mind. I can't even imagine it. Yet sometimes when these children get older, they start sounding that way. And the question is why? If you don't have a position on music, that style will become your default position. Because it is something that subjects you, and you subconsciously begin to imitate it. And I just want to say this. It's very important, not enough, to throw out or burn or whatever your immoral music. At the Bible school that you are sitting at now, in years past, people have done that. And there have been cases where, on their way home, they have bought it again. I'm not making it up. It's what happened. So it is not enough. I was recently, some time ago, speaking with a young man who got rid of his wrong kind of music. And I asked him the question, so what will you listen to now? And no answer. He's thrown away his music before. Is that the kind of cycle you want to go through? You must not only throw away, refuse the evil, but you must also choose the good. To get free of stuff like this, you have to make a conscious choice on what you're not going to do and what you are going to do. Both steps are very important. I want to talk a little bit about the mechanics of why in the past, 40, 50, 60 years that people have begun using that kind of voice because outside of some very freaky circumstances, people would not use that kind of voice. So what made the shift there, where it's permeating everything now? And just want to say this, that in days past, if you wanted to be heard, you had to learn how to project your voice. And I would just want to give you a quick example of what a projected voice is.
Oh Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands have made.
That is a projected voice. So it is a voice that carries. Now, for some people, it's natural in a way to sing that way. Some people you have to study it some. Okay, there is a way that you can be showed, and maybe not with the same exact color of voice or the same range, but everybody can learn to project their voice, that they can fill the room with their voice. Okay. The thing is, when the microphone was invented, all that learning just became optional. You do not have to learn anymore. You can take a microphone, have somebody whispering, and they will be heard by 10,000 people. And that's what made singing like this accessible to a large group of to a large audience in that kind of a voice. In that kind of intimate whispering voice, the kind of voice that you would never dare to talk with in a regular conversation, you would never talk that way. So you can talk or sing however you want, and still be heard. So I would like to come to my second conclusion, which is really the conclusion of this message, and I'm hoping that. In my sharing, that this will give you some things to think about. And my conclusion is this, is that CCM is a slippery slope. It is a slippery slope. You know, with all the gray positions or gray lines or gray whatever that is out there, it's hard to draw clear lines. It is. It is hard even for me. But as a whole, CCM is a slippery slope. There's an article written by a young woman in 2011 who was a teenager when CCM was really beginning to take on. A word about this article. It is inelegantly yet very fittingly named. And the title of it is Sniffing Glue. And she was homeschooled till 10th grade, went to CCM concerts, just was involved in that whole lifestyle, and was later exposed to MTV. Now, MTV stands for music television, and trust me, it's just a bunch of filth. Just a bunch of filth. So she was later exposed to that somewhere in a hotel room. The article goes on to say, and her response when she sees this, she says, "I couldn't have told you what the word irony meant, but I knew I'd been cheated by Christian rock. This was crack, and I've been wasting my time sniffing glue. In other words, this is the real stuff. You know, why am I going to listen to that cheap stuff that I've been listening to all this time when I can be listening to the real stuff?" Her parents disapproved of secular music, so she continued to listen in secret. Finally, she says the following: "Despite all the affected teenage rebellion, I continued to call myself a Christian into my early 20s. When I finally stopped, it wasn't because being a believer made me uncool or outdated or freakish. It was because being a Christian no longer meant anything. It was a label to slap on my Facebook page next to my music preferences. The gospel became just another product someone was trying to sell me. And the paltry one at that, because the church isn't Viacom, which is a global mass media company. It doesn't have a department of brand strategy and planning. Staying relevant in late consumer capitalism requires highly sophisticated resources and the willingness to tailor your values to whatever your audience wants. If you want to make money, that's the way to do it. You give your audience what they want. In trying to compete in this market, the church has forfeited the one advantage it had in the game to attract disillusioned youth: authenticity. When it comes to intransigent values, the profit-driven world has zilch to offer. If Christian leaders weren't so ashamed of those unvarnished values, they might have something more attractive than anything on today's bleak moral market. In the meantime, they've lost one more kid to the competition." You know, it is very rare when I hear or read people being so truthful. Here's somebody who no longer calls themselves a Christian and is not ashamed of it. And she states in a very prolific manner why. Lord help us that this would be what some of us are saying in a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. But if you go down that slippery slope, this is what you might be saying. This article was posted online and there were comments underneath. And I just sort of skimmed through them. And one really stuck out to me. It was really striking. And the writer here says, "I really enjoyed this. Weirdly, like reading my own memoirs. Funny thing, the Christian Acts imitation of secular artists motivated me to give them a listen and discover they were actually better. So those early naysayers were correct in warning of the slippery slope of so-called Christian rock. And I'm just happy and grateful that I went down that slope." Romans 1:32, "Who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them." So the Christian solution. I've been speaking all this time about what not to do or what to avoid. And I will get into that a little bit more into when I have a little question, when I give my responses. Not necessarily answers, but my responses to the questions that were dropped in that can over the past 2 days. The Christian solution. The very first one is, please, don't be naive. Don't just think that if you avoid music or that you listen to only a cappella, that you'll be okay. I've heard of some parents setting the following standards for their children, as long as it doesn't have instruments. Well, if you listen to those voice clips, there wasn't much of an accent on the instrumental part of it. You can sing in that kind of a voice without instruments, a cappella. And believe me, recordings that are produced by the extended Anabaptist circles are full of it. They're full of it. A cappella recordings. 2 Corinthians 2:11 says, "Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." After this message, even though as imperfect and as unthorough as it was, you are faced with a choice. Even if maybe I didn't explain something to the extent that it should be explained, if I wasn't completely thorough in my conclusions, I'm hoping that what I say here today puts you in front of a choice to at least seek God's direction have a Christ-like attitude to approaching this subject. If that's all that you will take away from this message, then I will consider it having a good effect on you. And that you learn something. Study and observe the real thing. Study and observe and sing unmistakably godly music. For example, bank tellers study the real money to be able to spot the fakes. We must surround ourselves with God-honoring music. Wrong music desensitizes you. What you could try is you could try musical fast for a month. Listen to only unmistakably godly music for 1 month, and then you will see what will happen to your musical taste. Try it. It is very hard to draw a clear line in music, but it has to be drawn, even if it's not a perfect line. There have to be some lines that are drawn. In this message, I'll do a little bit more in the when I read off the questions. But in this message, from giving it before, I usually don't mention names of groups or artists or songs or whatever. To me, the moral content is the deciding factor of what is acceptable and what is not. And I'll get into that a little bit later. My personal position is that I put the devil's music that is influenced, that has a sensual influence to it, I put that at the same level as pornography. I do that because the end results are similar. So the question is, how much will we tolerate? How much will we tolerate the wrong kind of music? We often make a big deal about not dressing immodestly, but often will allow a sensual, vulgar manner of singing without thinking too much of it. I've seen that happen before. We must always ask ourselves the questions, is this music causing me to muse, or is this amusing me? Is this causing me to think, or is this causing me not to think? Psalms 47, verse 7. For God is the King of all the earth. Sing ye praises with understanding. We have to know what we're doing. And burying your head in the sand is not the way out. It is not a way to avoid problems. You will only create more. This is a directional issue. It is part of a package. It is impossible to accept CCM and to keep other defilements that come along with it at bay. We must make a choice. What are we going to do with this? The things that we have heard just now, what are we going to do with them? Will we be part of God's restorative work or go along with the flow of this world into the degeneration that we see all around us? That is the question. Now, to make things even more relevant for you, I called Brother Mark up early in the week and asked him if there would be some questions that people would have on the subject. I would try to give a response to it. Not necessarily an answer, but at least a response. And so I'd like to read a few of them off. right now. So question number one here. Is it right for Christians to sing or listen to music composed or written by non-Christians or liberal Christians? For example, the song You Raised Me Up. It does not really tell in the song who the person was that raised up. It could be God, but it could be something else as well. And then some personal opinions on that matter. I would like to say this. Always go for high quality lyrics. That is the first thing that must be done in evaluating music. Always go for solid, high quality lyrics. Don't go for the trite and cheap stuff. Stuff that just repeats itself over and over and over and over again and does not have much deep value in it. Go for lyrics that leave no doubt as to what message you're trying to convey. I honestly did not listen to that song. There was some things that I needed to do, and I just did not get to it. Okay, so I can't make a more informed assessment of that particular song. But that is the principle. Always go for high quality lyrics. The question also asks about music by non-Christians or liberal Christians. Now, here I will go out on a limb a little bit and give my opinion on what I have seen and observed over the years of studying the subject. I have heard probably everything from black to white on this very subject, on what kind of composers can we sing, what, you know, does the life, how much does the life affect the musical composition. And again, from all the years that I've been just wrestling with this question and just making observations and particularly looking at the fruit. And again, feel free to disagree with me, and I would love to hear your opinion on why. But here's this. After examining the issue for a number of years, I have come to the conclusion that the life of the composer does not necessarily affect the music unless associations are a factor when evaluating the music. Our hymn books contain music of composers who lived less than exemplary lives. For example, Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee, that is taken, the music for that is taken straight out of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. I wouldn't necessarily consider Beethoven a God-fearing composer, but we sing it. Or at least as much as I know, for the most part, we would sing that. Take the music, put Christian lyrics on it, and that's what we do. If the principles of wholesome music are followed, I believe a not-so-good composer can write good music just like a gross sinner can potentially write out passages of Scripture that can be used to lead a person to Christ. Or somebody who prints Bibles that is a non-Christian completely. Can that Bible that he prints, can it be used to lead somebody to Christ? Do you know who printed your Bible? You know, it could be, you know, who knows who. But I would say this, if associations are a problem for your conscience, abstain. It won't be wrong. I'm open to other opinions on this. Question number two, can a certain kind of music be identified as wrong if the listener feels rebellious or wild whenever this music plays? That's one way to look at it, but I would certainly apply other principles as well. Like, for example, if in your circumstances the harmonica was only played by rebellious people and listening to recordings of harmonica music made you feel rebellious, I'd probably apply other principles to that as well before throwing out the, you know, that all harmonica music is bad, for example. Okay, I don't really care too much for harmonica, but that's just personal preference. I would also like to add that I have some fascinating, regarding about feelings, what music makes you feel like. I have some fascinating material on a study that was done on how music affects plants. Very eye-opening. If you want it, you come see me and I can get that information over to you. I don't have printouts. I would have to get it over to you some other way. Let's take a look at another question. Yuri, is there a difference between the music we sing in Sunday morning worship and what we should listen to privately? It's a big issue at our church, with many believing that it's fine to listen to music at home that they would consider positively wrong to sing at church. What insight do you have? Thanks. The question to me poses and presents a big contrast between people considering some music fine at home and positively wrong at church. I'm not sure if that was exactly the intent of the question to get the message across that way. But I would say that principles must remain the same. You know, why not? What big difference does it have to do if you're listening to something at home, whether you're listening with other people? And you know, there are some things that can be said. Like, for example, if you're going to meet for a church service, you would put on maybe not your work clothes. You would put on something clean, hopefully. So you know, just yes, there are a little bit of difference. Like, for example, the only possibly related example that I could that I would think that would relate to that would be some children's songs, maybe. But I don't know if you can call them positively wrong. Like, do we all know the children's song, Only a Boy Named David? You know, it's very cute to see my niece and nephew singing that song, especially when they go through the hand motions and they're just, you know, looking at their mommy. This is just the greatest thing ever, you know? Now, are the lyrics to that children's song, are they particularly deep? Not exactly. But you know, as a children's song, I think there could be a place for that, and we wouldn't necessarily sing that for our Sunday service. Next, several questions, and I will read them in a group because they are all related. So, how do I tell what different kind of instrumental songs that I listen to is good? I love to listen to bluegrass. Is that something I should stick to or not? What about instrumental hymns? Are they godly? Is contemporary music okay to listen to? How do you view the presenting of music programs to the church? I always enjoy listening to a good music presentation / program, but in our community, there is a lot of hesitation in receiving these, especially among the older generation. It's viewed perhaps as a step closer to the world or in glorying in talent because a specific group are singing and not all can participate. What are your thoughts on this? A very legitimate question. Is music moral, immoral, or amoral? And do we worship with instrumental music? I would like to play guitar. Is that okay? Is it too dangerous because they are often used for contemporary music? How can I, or can I, as a Christian who plays a musical instrument, use that for God's glory and kingdom? That is a whole mouthful, and that is a whole series of messages in and of itself. So I will just give very brief my very brief thoughts on that. If we're talking about the guitar, we got to talk about the rest of the instruments as well. Remember, contemporary is not necessarily a bad word, but we do want to avoid CCM, like I talked about earlier. Any instrument can be used to produce the wrong kind of music if it adds sensuality. Okay, those clips that we heard, those are not limited to the voice. You can use an instrument to produce the same effect. In some cases, it's quite harder, but it is possible. With enough skill, one can play jazz on a harp. I'm not kidding. But I've heard a saxophone play Bach before. And I think it sounded very beautiful. Question that came across through quite a few of these is, can we worship with instruments? Jesus said, "But the hour cometh and now is when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him." Concepts like spirit and truth are not necessarily tangible, but they do produce fruit. If you are a true worshiper and you are worshiping God in spirit and in truth, and it has to be both of those, the truth aspect of it must be there. then you are worshiping how God wants you to worship. Again, that thought there can be developed. Like I said, it's a whole series of messages on worship and what is the right way to worship and what is the right way to praise. You can speak about that subject for a week. The question is, can instruments be used to praise God while maintaining a spirit of worship? Also, just to keep in mind, just because you may be or are appearing to be praising God, doesn't necessarily mean that you are in the spirit of worship. If you would like more details on my views on instruments and using instruments as a means of glorifying God, join me for lunch. I'm available. I would love to discuss this subject because it is something that I'm still coming to a full understanding with. I'm still coming to a understanding of the subject on my own. So that is something I'm still developing. I would love to hear your thoughts, and I would enjoy sharing mine, seeing what I've observed and seeing some of the fruit that I've seen. Also, another big point is you can be doing something that's not necessarily wrong, but if you're going out from under authority, out from God-given godly authority, if you're going out from under that, then I would question it. It doesn't have to do with musical instruments or singing at that point. It is a question of the heart. It's just sometimes we try to stick issues in the forefront and not really look at what the real issues are. So whatever the case, you still have to be under authority, under your parents' authority, God-given authority. I'll just put it that way. When deciding, getting answers for such questions. Question number 9. How do you avoid worshiping music, singing because it sounds good, rather than worshiping God? Again, it's an objective approach to art. You know, potentially any kind of art form can be used to glorify God or to glorify self or Satan or wickedness. It says in the beginning God created, right? God created the heavens and the earth, and since we are made in the image of God, the idea or the drive to create things is present in each and every one of us. For someone, it might be building houses, making baskets. For somebody, it might be painting a picture, composing music. We're all made differently. That's the beauty of the body of, you know, if we're looking at the church, is the beauty that we are all different members, but still part of the same body. You know, the world would be very boring if everybody was like Yuri Kravitz, believe me. All I can say about that, how not to worship music, is look at the fruit coming out. Look at the fruit coming out. All right, next question. So what is bluegrass music? And what do you think about bluegrass? Is it wrong for a Christian to play or listen to bluegrass music if they don't know the lyrics, but just the tune or melody? So let me define bluegrass music, and this is not a definition that I made up. This is what I got from, again, Wikipedia was one of the sources, and then another source that I just found online. So, according to Wikipedia, bluegrass is a form of American roots music and a subgenre of country music. Bluegrass was inspired by the music of Appalachia. It has mixed roots in Irish, Scottish, Welsh, and English traditional music, and also later influenced by the music of African Americans through incorporation of jazz elements. Now, I'd like to define the term genre in case that's a new word for somebody. Genre is a category of artistic composition, as in music or literature, characterized by similarities in form, style, or subject matter. Basically, a style. Let's just, for our purposes, we'll just limit that to a style. So, The second definition would be a kind of country music influenced by jazz and blues and characterized by virtuosic playing of banjos and guitars and high-pitched, close harmony vocals. So I would almost be, I would feel safe saying that when we think of bluegrass, that is not the definition that we think of. For many, the familiar definition is music that includes banjo, guitar, stand-up bass, fiddle, and mandolin. But my question is, and like we can ask ourselves, is that combination wrong? Not necessarily. The question is, what happens when you get good? When you get good in that style of music? Where will your creativity take you? Another point that a brother pointed out to me that I really appreciate: music is not the end. Music is only one aspect of our direction. However, it is significant enough that if we get this area wrong, it will be instrumental in changing our direction from off of Christ to looking at the world. It is significant enough. I have some regrets in my helping get someone established musically or tutoring or teaching. I have some regrets in that. A very gifted young man who is using today his talents to create worldly music. And you know what? Several years ago, he sat where you are sitting. So that was just a side note right there. But it's a directional issue, like I said. And depending on what you do with it, depends a lot of where you are spiritually. Another question. Why are old hymns so irrelevant for today? Okay, I'm not going to necessarily question the motive of that question. I will say this. If a hymn is a combination of solid words and music, I can't see why it would be irrelevant for today or in the year 3000. I just don't see it. Why it would be irrelevant. Maybe I'm missing the thought here of the asker or the intent, but I'd be willing to discuss. Another question. What is halal music? I enjoy this music, but someone warned me about it, and I don't know why. I want to be careful in what I listen to. Very legitimate question, and it's one that I get asked often. So I went on their website a couple days ago and listened to a few random tracks on what they offer. And there are definitely elements of the pop voice being present. Although the people singing have quite a bit of training in how they're singing. So these are not just home studio singers. These are professionals, as much as it sounds like. And let me say this: if you try to imitate that style, you will probably end up sounding like those kind of voice clips that we heard today. So I would have strong cautions on that. There is better quality music than that. Let's just say it that way. So let's not see with what we can get away with, but let's stay in the area that has as little questions as possible. Let's stay out of the gray area. Number 15. What is your view of classical music? Is all or some or none of it okay? Also, how does it fit in with Colossians 3:16 and Ephesians 5:19? Another very good question, and I think it's a very misunderstood topic, the subject of classical music. Let me give you a definition for classical music. Two definitions. A traditional genre of music conforming to an established form and appealing to critical interest and developed musical taste. Serious or conventional music following long-established principles rather than folk, jazz, or popular tradition. So according to that definition, all of you have been involved in the process of creating classical music this week. If you disagree, then my question is, what were you doing? And then again, according to those definitions, regardless of what we might have, what kind of connotations we might have with classical music. Okay, I'll read them again. Classical music is a traditional genre of music conforming to an established form and appealing to critical interest and developed musical taste. Serious or conventional music following long-established principles rather than a folk, jazz, or popular tradition. However, some songs that we do sing and would be in our hymn books would have some folk elements to them. So we can't really say that necessarily folk music is wrong. But if you look at the root of those definitions, it is a high standard. The question asks how classical music fits in with Ephesians 5:19 and Colossians 3:16, and I will read those verses. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. Colossians 3:16 says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. All right, so that's what it says to do. All right, the question is, if we're going to be singing them, what kind of music are we going to be singing them to? There is nothing that I know of exists from the kind of music that was used. We have ideas, musicologists have ideas on what it could have sounded like, but we don't have anything written. The oldest, when music really began to be written down was around, 400 or 500 years ago. That's the earliest. So we do not know what kind of music the first church, what the style of music was that they were singing. We don't know that. And since we don't know what the actual music was, like from the Psalms, we borrow today from the classical tradition of music making when we sing them today. How else? How else are you going to do it? Again, a highly interesting subject that I'm still coming to a firm belief on, and it's something that I would be very interested in discussing. I would like to go a little further and answer also partially with this verse. 1 Corinthians 14:26. How is it then, brethren, when you come together, every one of you hath a psalm, hath a doctrine, hath a tongue, hath a revelation, hath an interpretation. Let all things be done unto edifying. I believe that is the standard. I believe that last phrase is valid across the board. Now let's give a definition of edifying. According to Webster's 1812, the dictionary there, edify means to instruct and improve the mind in knowledge generally, and particularly in moral and religious knowledge, in faith and holiness. And again, I have more thoughts on that matter. If you'd like to hear them and you'd like to exchange ideas, please join me for lunch. God bless you all.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Effort of Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.